You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
India and Iran. The historical relationship between these two countries is a storied one. As early cradles of civilization in this part of the world, India and Iran, erstwhile Persia, have had ties dating back thousands of years. For example, Zoroastrian people, fleeing from religious persecution in 8th century Persia, traveled east to find a safe haven in western India. India is still home to the world's largest community of Parsis. In 1932, just take last century for example, the great Rabindranath Tagore of India, a popular poet in Persia, was invited to the country by Reza Shah, the then ruler of Iran. The visit left such an impression on Tagore that he wrote, and I quote, "I have visited Sadi's tomb, I have sat beside the resting place of Hafiz and intimately felt his touch in the glimmering green of your woodlands in blossoming roses. The past age of Persia lent the old world perfume of its own sunny hours of spring to the morning of that day, and the silent voice of your ancient poet filled the silence in the heart of the poet of modern India." The architect of modern India, Jawaharlal Nehru, wrote in his Discovery of India, "Few people have been more closely related in origin and throughout history than the people of India and the people of Iran." Indeed, in Semitic accounts, we have all heard of Noah and the great floods. In both Iranian and Indian accounts, Noah is the son of the same person, Vivasvat or Vivankat. According to the traditions of the Vendidad, the ancestors of the Iranians lived in 15 other countries turn by turn. One of these was Haptahindu, that is, Sapta Sindhu, the cradle land of Indo-Aryan civilization. Our shared linguistic heritage is too profound to be explored here, but suffice to say that we share a linguistic mind. Manas in Sanskrit and Mana in Avestic. There are several documented instances of continued rich exchange between the two countries across millennia, be it in trade, culture, religion, or philosophy. But in 2018, our relationship is dominated by the currency of the world, oil. India needs a lot of oil, and Iran has a lot of oil. Our economy would probably come to a standstill if we didn't have diesel generators, and I don't think I can ever adequately exaggerate that statement to be purely comedic. We have very little oil and import most of it, around 80% of our requirements. A price hike of just $1 per barrel of crude oil will increase India's import bill by 10,700 crores, or nearly $1.5 billion. Devendra Kumar Pant, chief economist at India Ratings, estimated that if oil price averages $75 a barrel in the year to March, India's oil import bill will rise by a staggering $30 billion. Given the kind of money that flows out of India thanks to our appetite for crude oil, the American sanctions on Iran came as a rude jolt to the system. America has mandated its allies, India being one of them, to stop trading with Iran. India, Iran, and the US are therefore now stuck in a love triangle gone bad. How will such a development affect us? Will our oil bill shoot up and cause higher inflation? Or do we have alternatives in place? On Digging Deeper with Money Control, today we look at the reasons for the sanctions and what they could do to India's economy. My name is Rakesh and you're listening to Money Control,
the Deep Dive podcast series. The impact of US sanctions on Iran.
Aside from watching an occasional Iranian classic by Majid Majidi or Abbas Kiarostami or Asghar Farhadi, you know, one of the urban elite favourites, in today's time, the common Indian doesn't really have much of a connection with Iran. And even then, the audience for these films is merely one of the creamy elite. What binds the two countries today is oil. Iranian oil. It was lesser known until recently that India has been buying oil from Iran for a long time now. Our biggest suppliers of crude oil are Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Iran. We imported 3.1 million tons from Iraq, much more than the 2.8 million tons shipped over from Saudi Arabia. A MoneyControl.com report noted that Iraq overtook Saudi Arabia as India's largest supplier of crude by volume in December last year, thanks to discounted sales. Iraq and Saudi Arabia earned $1.4 billion each in oil trade with India. Iran is our third largest supplier of oil. Imports rose 34.45% from about $818 million to $1.1 billion in the previous fiscal. Iran sent us around 577,000 barrels per day this fiscal. 10 years ago, Iranian oil accounted for 16.5% of all the oil we imported. India did make some change in its trade with Iran around 2010 when the civil nuclear agreement with the US was being negotiated under Obama, but did not participate in any economic sanctions on Iran. The Bush administration, as well as the Obama administration, recognized India's close ties to Iran, particularly with regard to oil trade, and made exceptions for India in their actions against Iran. Federica Mogherini, Foreign Affairs Chief for the European Union, said last month that a special purpose vehicle could be set up, one that enables EU states, China and Russia to continue trading with Iran under the scope of the 2015 deal reached with the Obama administration without being caught up in secondary sanctions by the US now. Bloomberg observed that such a system seemed feasible. It wrote, and I quote, "The weakness in the SWIFT system is its reliance on US dollars. If European, Russian or Chinese companies instead paid for their Iranian crude with euros, rubles or yuan, ideally the former, that is euros, given what's been happening to emerging market currencies, Iran could turn around and use that hard currency to buy European, Russian or Chinese goods, keeping the entire trade out of reach of US prosecutors." Unquote. India could get in on this action, except for one serious issue: trade deficit. According to the International Trade Center, India's trade deficit with Iran was at $8.5 billion last year. Bloomberg noted that setting up a special purpose vehicle to balance out trade would essentially require Iran to sell its oil to India on credit. India, as well as Japan and South Korea, account for more than 100% of Iran's overall $14.5 billion trade surplus. Both South Korea and Japan have halted oil imports from Iran in line with the demands of the US government. Switching to a different currency would require economically strapped Iran to extend ever-increasing amounts of credit to larger trading partners. India's work on the Chabahar port, close to Iran's border with Pakistan, has been inconsistent, so we still have some way to go before India can implement a solution similar to China's Belt and Road initiative. Bloomberg also said that ships ferrying oil could, and sometimes do, switch off their transponders to avoid satellite tracking. Essentially, an under-the-table affair. But first of all, why sanctions? And why now? Let's quickly run through why things have come to such an impasse. Donald Trump does not like the nuclear deal Barack Obama struck with Iran in 2015. Let's be honest, Donald Trump does not like anything that came about during Obama's time. That is the only thing he wants to do during his tenure, as has been amply documented. He even campaigned against the nuclear deal while running for office. He has been vocal about his disapproval of the deal since assuming office and finally pulled the US out of the deal in May. And when that happened, we did an extremely detailed podcast on what the deal is about, why Obama made it, what were the terms of the deal, and why Donald Trump did not like it. The reason for why Trump doesn't like it? Well, Obama made it. As I've made it clear, that's all he wants to do. The American president, on paper, believes the 2015 deal did not adequately address what he sees as Iran's transgressions in the Middle East, its support for terrorism, or its ballistic missile program. Basically, Trump wants a new, tougher deal, and he's willing to reinstate sanctions that were frozen by the 2015 agreement. And this, after accurate and verified evidence to show that Iran has towed the line of the deal and they have not been developing nuclear weapons. But Trump. Trump has even threatened to penalize close allies if they continue doing business with Iran. His stance is also affecting Iran's economy and putting pressure on Iran's President Hassan Rouhani, who pushed hard for the nuclear accord with Obama. Until now, the Trump administration has prohibited purchasing Iranian debt and pistachios and barred the sale of commercial aircraft by Boeing and Airbus to Iran. Their contention is that economic sanctions, which banned trade and investment in Iran, forced them to negotiate. They were relaxed once the nuclear deal was signed. The November sanctions are aimed at Iran's port operators, insurance and reinsurance businesses, and foreign purchases of Iranian oil. American officials have dispatched teams of diplomats to persuade many nations, even China, which is Iran's largest oil buyer, to cut Iranian oil purchases to as close to zero as possible. Countries that don't acquiesce could find their companies sanctioned as well. Manisha Singh, Assistant Secretary of State for Economic and Business Affairs, said during a congressional hearing, and I quote, "We are prepared to take the strongest actions possible on people who will not assist us in complying with this new range of sanctions that we're putting back into place," unquote. Congressman Elliot Engel asked if any of the major buyers of Iranian crude, China, India, Japan, South Korea and Europe, if they refuse to sharply cut their purchases, are we really prepared to cut their banks off from the global banking system, which is the penalty under the US sanctions? Manisha Singh replied, and I quote, "We are prepared to take the most serious actions possible on Iran. We need to demonstrate to the Iranian regime that we will not tolerate its development of a nuclear program for illicit purposes." She went on to add, "We are talking with all of our allies, including the countries that you mentioned, helping them to understand that the only way that we can achieve this global goal of Iran's nuclear program not commencing is through partnership and cooperation with our allies," unquote. Last week, the International Criminal Court instructed the United States to lift sanctions on medicine, food, and civilian airplane spare parts. However, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.N. court did not rule more broadly against U.S. sanctions and insisted that the U.S. has already exempted humanitarian goods from the upcoming sanctions. He said, and I quote, "This is a decision, frankly, that is 39 years overdue." Unquote. Pompeo might have been referring to the time since the 1979 Islamic Revolution transformed Iran from one of America's closest allies to a bitter foe. The consequences of Trump's decision were quick to come. German automaker Daimler AG froze plans to produce Mercedes-Benz trucks in Iran. Companies from Total SA to Renault SA and the PSA Group have put on hold their Iran plans. Mint reported about early indications that European nations and Japan will stop buying Iranian crude this month. That could mean Iran's exports could decrease by 350,000 barrels a day by November, taking daily output down to around 1.3 million barrels a day. South Korea has not shipped any oil from Iran for around 3 months now. Iran is also losing customers for condensate, which is a form of superlight oil used in the petrochemical industry. With South Korea ceasing purchases, Iranian exports of condensate dropped in the first half of September to 175,000 barrels a day. That is a drop of more than 40% from April. Joe McMonigal, an energy analyst at Hedgeye Risk Management LLC and a former senior official with the U.S. Energy Department, told Bloomberg, "The first wave of sanctions in August sent the message to the market that the U.S. was serious, and I think it has resulted in these early cuts to Iranian exports ahead of the 4th November implementation of oil sanctions." Unquote. Iran, which is dependent on oil and has been battling inflation and slow growth, could be seriously impacted by the sanctions. According to the International Monetary Fund, oil accounts for nearly 80% of Iran's tax revenue. However, according to Bloomberg, Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who has the final say on state matters, rejected talks, quote-unquote, at any level with the U.S. He said the Trump administration has proved that it cannot be trusted. What is the fallout of these sanctions? The sanctions reverberated through the global oil market, pushing benchmark Brent to $84.97 a barrel even as we speak. It crossed past the $86 a barrel mark only recently. Though Russia and Saudi Arabia, who cooperated closely in oil over the last 2 years, offset some of the impact by boosting their own outputs, traders are betting it won't be sufficient to replace all the losses from Iran. Bank of America Merrill Lynch speculated about a redux of the 2008 price spike. Mercuria Energy Group Limited and Trafigura Group, among the world's biggest trading houses, predicted that the loss of Iran's supply will push crude prices to $100 a barrel for the first time since 2014. BP's CEO, Bob Dudley, said he sees the sanctions on the OPEC nations having a bigger impact on the market this time round than the previous round of restrictions in 2012. Thibaut Raimondo, founder of Commodities Trading Corporation Limited, told Bloomberg, and I quote, "The physical market has clearly tightened, reinforcing the bullish narrative on geopolitical and supply risks," unquote. Refiners have little choice but to comply with the sanctions. Washington can cut off access to the U.S. financial system for any company viewed as doing business with Iran. Besides blocking of banking channels from November, the absence of payment mechanism may pose a challenge to the transportation of the oil, as Iranian crude is bought on a CIF basis and shipped on Iranian tankers. Oil refiners from China to France are scrambling to find alternative supplies and in the process are pushing up the prices of crude. But the big multi-billion dollar question is, what about us? And that is also probably the reason why you're still listening. For India, these sanctions could prove severely problematic. The government is already facing a daily backlash over the falling value of the rupee as well as record-high fuel prices. It does not want to halt oil imports from Iran due to the discounts on oil sales to India. Economic growth, along with low prices, had led to an increase in demand for oil in the recent past. The import value of crude oil rose from 171.73 million metric tons in 2012 to 213.93 million metric tons by 2017. The Ministry of Petroleum and Natural Gas estimates this figure will touch 217.08 MMT in 2018. If India has to play along with the sanctions, the rise in domestic demand will have to be met by substituting Iran's output with other suppliers. Mint reported that Russia's Urals blend has been trading at its highest premium to the Brent benchmark since the beginning of the year. Chinese refiners purchase large amounts of Urals from the port of Rotterdam. That's an unusually long hop for an oil purchase. Oman crude is also at unusually expensive levels, while Basra Light from Iraq is also selling better than usual. Iran has attempted to soften some of the impact by offering China and India, the two countries likely to keep buying at least some oil, to ship the crude using its own tankers at no extra cost. Such a move effectively gives India and China a minor discount. In the first 2 weeks of September, India loaded just 240,000 barrels a day of Iranian oil, less than half the usual amount. Officials said imports from Iran after the 4th of November will be possible only if Iran accepts alternates, like rupee payments. That is not a new idea. When sanctions were imposed on Iran earlier, India had put in place a system to acquire oil by partially bartering goods and remitting payment in rupees. Indian refiners currently transact with Iranian suppliers through the State Bank of India and the Germany-based Europisch-Iranisch Handelsbank AG, that is EIH, to buy Iranian oil in euros. Another official said replacing Iranian oil will not pose a problem, but margins will be affected because Iran offers the best commercial terms. It provides 60 days of credit for purchases, which is not available from suppliers like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Iraq, Nigeria, or the US. Iran is now starting to store unsold crude in supertankers, a practice known as floating storage that it also used during the Obama-era sanctions. Government sources told the media that India is looking to revive its quasi-barter mechanism of trade with Iran to sidestep American sanctions. Official sources also said high-sulfur crude from the Middle East, particularly from Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, can replace the quantities being purchased from Iran, while other sources in South America and the US are also some of the other options being discussed. Rigid sanctions that do not offer waivers of any kind will open a window of opportunity for other oil-producing nations to increase their market share in countries that are allies of the US. However, India is hoping for a waiver. According to Reuters, Washington said last Friday that it was considering waivers for nations that were reducing imports of Iranian oil. That communication came after a report that India, which cut back on Iranian crude imports in recent months, plans to lift some oil in November. India could lift 9 million barrels of Iranian oil in November, equivalent to about 300,000 barrels a day, compared to an average of about 658,000 barrels a day from April to August, according to data from Reuters. Oil Minister Dharmendra Pradhan said on Monday, and I quote, "Two of our oil companies have made nominations to purchase Iranian oil in November." He went on to add, "We do not know if we will get waiver or not." Indian Oil Corporation's chairman Sanjeev Singh said his company is among the two that have placed orders for November. He said, and I quote, "We have ordered for our usual quantity of oil," unquote. IOC, along with IOC and Mangalore Refinery and Petrochemicals Limited, placed an order for 1.25 million tons of crude oil from Iran. Sanjay Sudhir, a joint secretary with the oil ministry, said Indian refiners have begun importing oil from the United States, but purchases were constrained by US infrastructure. He said, and I quote, "As US infrastructure improves, India has a potential to lift more." Pradhan minced no words on the subject. He said, "We expect the global leadership to acknowledge India's need for Iran's oil," unquote. Business Today reported that Saudi Arabia charges a premium on cargoes heading eastwards, whereas Iran offers deeper discounts. Although diplomats in Washington continue to assure their counterparts that they're pushing OPEC members to increase their output to bring down prices, the situation on the ground hasn't improved much. According to the Hindustan Times, the government conveyed to the Trump administration that India is a fit case for a presidential waiver from the provisions of Countering America's Adversaries Through Sanctions Act, that is CATSA, on Russia and the sanctions on trade with Iran. Well, there we have it, a historically strong relationship with a country that is currently on a sour patch with the United States. How India will get impacted in all of this will certainly be known to us starting the 4th of November, but the tremors of the possible seismic change are already beginning to be felt. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.